Recording has started. Okay, we are going to pick up with our penitential psalms look. And I think this morning we are looking at our second penitential psalm, which is number 32. And I appreciate your patience in doing Psalm 22, kind of throwing that into the picture, but I thought it was an interesting discussion, and it's kind of appropriate for the particular time we did. So this one, Psalm 32, the title says that the Lord grants forgiveness if a person acknowledges his sin. And that's an interesting thing. The word "if" is in there. A lot of times when Jesus is teaching us, he uses "if," which is a conditional. So whenever he says the word "if," that means he's looking for something from us as well. You know, if you do this, then we'll do that. Mm-hmm. Like if any man loves me, he will keep my word, and the Father will love him, and we will dwell in him. Well, the "if" there obviously means, well, if you're going to keep the word, you got to find out what the word is, right? Well, the will of God. So it puts an obligation on us to fulfill the other half of that "if," since he's doing that. And it says it's a psalm of David, a maskil. Do you know what a maskil is? I didn't know either.
No.
But there was that's a definition of maskil.
It's almost like someone's name.
Maskil. Means teaching or training, it says in the bottom of my book.
So the maskil has several meanings. In the Psalms, a maskils are a meditation on feelings of or sadness or distress. So it's a meditation on what somebody feels, or if they're on sadness or somebody in distress of some kind. So that's what a maskil is in terms of the Psalms. But it says there are several different definitions depending on where it's used and how it's used. So this is a meditation on feelings of sadness or distress. So we'll see what this says. So begins, it says, "Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord imputes no iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit." And the note here says, the psalmist has had the good fortune to receive God's forgiveness and can approach God with sincerity of heart. Apropos of the example of Abraham, St. Paul applies these first two verses to a person justified by God on account of faith, not works. And he says, so David pronounces a blessing upon the man to whom God reckons righteousness apart from works. Blessed are those whose iniquities are forgiven and whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man against whom the Lord will not reckon his sin. That's in Romans chapter 4. And so now the psalmist goes on to talk about what was the effect of not forgiving his, not confessing his sin. And what was David's primary sin? Adultery with Bathsheba, and then the killing of her husband. So it's a double whammy there. Two sins against the Ten Commandments. And so, and he was trying to hide it. You remember that? He didn't want anybody to know about it. He tried to keep it secret. And then the prophet Nathan came in and told him, you know, what his sins were. He said, you're the one who did this. He kind of trapped David because he poses a scenario for him. He says, what would you do? And David says, oh my God, blah, 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 you do this. Well, that's what you did. So you just pronounce the sentence on yourself, you know. So,
what was it, murder? Yeah. Murder?
And yeah, the murder and adultery, yeah. And so, and that was one of the reasons why we named our little boy Nathan, because we figured as feisty as he was all through pregnancy, he's going to tell off the king if he has to, you know.
My brother's name is David.
Yeah.
Right. I'm like, oh well.
Yeah. And so then he says, when I declared not my sin, my body wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night the hand was heavy upon me. My strength was dried up as by the heat of summer. I acknowledged my sin to thee, and I did not hide my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord. Then thou didst forgive the guilt of my sin. So it's only then that he forgave. And as then he goes on and he says, therefore, let everyone who is godly offer prayer to thee at a time of distress. In the rush of great waters, they shall not reach him. Thou art a hiding place for me. Thou preservest me from trouble. Thou dost encompass me with deliverance. And so he's talking about all the, you know, what caused him to do it, and then what the effects were of confessing his sin. And you can see how he's talking here, that God was pinging on his conscience. He was all distressed when he was trying to hide his sin. And you can't hide your sin from God, you know. I'm not sure he understood that at the time, but he tried to do that. It didn't work. He says, for day and night thy hand was heavy upon me. My strength was dried up. But then I acknowledged my sin. I did not hide my iniquity. But thou dost forgive the guilt of my sin. So that's something we need to think about too. About, you know, people go to confession sometimes, but they're, when they do something really bad, they try to hide it. They're afraid to confess it. So they tell everything but that, because they're afraid the priest is going to recognize their voice, you know, and think badly of them and stuff like this. But you can't do that. You got to confess, you know. How can God possibly tell you what his plan is for dealing with your sin if you don't confess your sin? Because once you confess it, then he works through the priest to tell you what his plan is to do that. And so if you feel that you have something so bad that you don't want your priest that knows you to know, but go to a different parish where the priest doesn't know you, you know. But one way or the other, you got to confess it. You can't just keep hiding.
A priest in a sermon, I think on Edith Buchanan something, said, don't ever worry about coming to us, he said, because you haven't committed the greatest sin in the world. St. Peter did it when he denied Christ. Mm-hmm. He said, please, don't feel.
Yeah, or Judas when he,
Judas,
when he betrayed
him.
Christ.
Betrayed
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
And how can Father Brian said he did 150?
Yeah.
I mean, that
yeah.
would be a blur.
Right.
At the end.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
at the end,
you can't remember anything. My son Michael
told me. Well, if someone said, I murdered my neighbor, maybe that would stick out, but otherwise.
Yeah. My son Michael told me he was hearing confessions one day, and he was really tired. He fell asleep.
Oh, yeah. You hear that a lot.
And finally he woke up. When somebody said, Father, he woke Aww. Up and he gave him the absolution.
Because it must get boring.
Oh, yeah. It does.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. With Father Finian, you could see through the window. Of course,
yeah.
He'd have his... he'd be doing everything on the cell phone. I'm not criticizing. It's human.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because a lot of them are going to... Because people tell the same sin all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they say, well, I used the Lord's name in vain, you know, three times or something like this. And they keep saying the same thing every time they go. And you, after a while, you get numb to hearing that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've gone to a Spanish priest. I don't even know what he said to me.
Yeah.
I walked out. I go, it still counts. But
yeah, it still counts. That's right.
Before I had the hearing aids, I could never hear Father Smith. He's always telling me something. I go, so when I got him, I said, boy, now I can hear you.
He's probably going, what?
Crazy.
All that missed advice.
I never heard him. I had my ear up.
Where is he this week?
He's on. He's in Spain this week.
Spain?
Ooh, yeah.
I know he goes to Fatima a lot.
He goes
to Fatima.
Yeah.
Oh.
So he's in Spain this week.
Oh, that's nice.
So the psalmist describes how he suffered physically and morally prior to confessing his sin to God, and how he then reacted and decided to seek the Lord and look for forgiveness. He knows from his own experience that all believers will obtain pardon if they have recourse to the Lord, no matter how severe the threat of punishment may be, even in the rush of great waters, a metaphor reminiscent of the flood. So he's thinking back to the flood of Noah, you know, at this time. And then that's covered in Genesis chapter 7. For this very reason, he tells God how much he trusts in him. The Christian can see here the critical state of a soul in sin and the need to seek peace in the sacrament of penance, where contrition and conversion are even more a drawing near to the holiness of God, a rediscovery of one's true identity, which has been upset and disturbed by sin, a liberation in the very depth of self, and thus a regaining of lost joy, the joy of being saved. which the majority of people in our time are no longer capable of experiencing, says John Paul II. Regaining the lost joy, the joy of being saved, and St. John Paul says, which the majority of people in our time are no longer capable of experiencing.
Why aren't they capable of experiencing it?
He doesn't explain that, but it's in a encyclical he wrote called Reconciliatio et Penitentiae.
Don't you think it's because people today don't see things right. as sin?
Right, yeah. I think that's yeah. it too. Oh.
Yeah. Well, I think it's both things, because he said it's a liberation in the very depths of self, and thus a regaining of lost joy and the joy of being saved. Maybe they don't ever have that joy in the first place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? So this majority of people in our time are no longer capable of experiencing.
Well, like, they don't take joy in spiritual things.
No.
Right.
You know, like little things mm-hmm. that only God can do. Tiny little yeah. things. Mm-hmm. You can get joyous. Yeah. You know? And they don't yeah. relate.
Especially when they're so focused on the things in the world.
Yeah.
You know, getting ahead in your job, making money, and all that kind of stuff. You don't ever think about your spiritual life. So you don't have that joy of connection with God, of yeah. feeling close to God and everything. Hmm. And it's important to have that because it gives you a balance. You know, there was a guy I worked with when I worked with MITRE, and he was an executive. I think I might have told you all this already. But anyway, he was one of the EE7 level executive. And he was very dedicated to his job. And he came to work one day, and they said, every E7 is now fired mm-hmm. because you guys cost us too much. Mm-hmm. Instead of just, okay, he was married, he had kids and everything. Yeah. He committed suicide
yeah. Yeah.
because he was just so wrapped up in his job.
Yeah.
It took over his life. And he couldn't imagine himself without that job. He never considered that, okay, I'll leave and go get a job with somebody else.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. A job is not your end in life. A job is something you use to be able to do the other things that you have to do, like yeah. take care of your family and all that kind of stuff, you know.
It sounds like someone that's never had like a crisis before, that they could grow, you know what I mean? And suddenly they yeah. had this big one, and so they didn't have any reserves
yeah.
or practice or whatever.
Yeah.
You know
that,
we
that
have
could be, yeah.
here. It's like a practice yeah. thing.
The first one is always the worst, you know, yeah. the first layoff or something.
Yeah.
Some big yeah. thing yeah. like that, yeah.
Mm. I was talking to a guy one day, his first wife died, he was married to his second wife. He said, I really appreciate my second wife because my first wife made me so miserable all the time. I now have great joy and thanksgiving with my second wife.
Oh, man. Wow.
Oh, God, it was good to him.
Right.
Yeah, good for him, you know. He finally found the right one the second time.
He deserved it, I guess, yeah. the first one.
Yeah. So then we go on to verse 8, which says, now God is now speaking to the psalmist. The psalmist is no longer speaking himself. He says, I will instruct you and teach you the way you should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you. Be not like a horse or a mule without understanding, which must be curbed with bit and bridle, else it would not keep with you. Many are the pangs of the wicked, but steadfast love surrounds him who trusts in the Lord. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, O righteous, and shout for joy, all you upright of heart. So God is now speaking, and he's saying, I'm going to now teach you, I'm going to instruct you the way you should go. And so that's the climax of the whole psalm, because it's now saying, I have to put my trust in God to do that. I can't just sit there and try to figure it out. He's going to lead me where he wants to lead me.
Oh, my God. So this, like, everything is alive. You read the Bible, right? Sometimes it's, yeah. you know, you don't get anything. Sometimes, like this, I always like the song. But I'll tell you, it's coincidence, crazy. Like, I said this morning after communion. I said, Lord, take the reins of my life, you know, and rein me in.
Yeah.
And you be the one, you know, to do your will.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of the horse. I mean, that yeah. happens a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, you hear a sermon, and right. what about those yeah. thoughts the night before? I mean,
yeah.
it's like, it's all one God, one yeah. thought going around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I had one about going to confession.
Yeah.
and then later on that night doing something that you're like, oh, I need to go back to confession. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're like, and it just haunts you. And then there was a whole homily on it and a YouTube thing on it. I got all like the next day.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, you're overthinking it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not that bad. And, you know, it's the devil to get you upset.
Yeah.
And, it's like, wow, it was so timely.
Well, the good thing about that, too, is that it shows that you have a sensitive conscience.
Mm-hmm.
You recognize
I was like, oh, I gave such a wonderful and then, like, within a day, I had a list of four things, and then I couldn't go back. It was Easter, and there wasn't any more. And I went, like, 3 weeks with these four things, and then I got in, and I was like, and I don't even think I remembered when I finally went in.
The older you get, you don't remember. I don't remember. You know, you got to go back over the whole day ago.
But they were haunting me, and I was like, oh, that's not the way it should be.
You can get those forgiven at Mass.
Yeah. But then that was the other thing. It was a vicious circle. I was like, but are these... you know, higher than being, you know, how do you know? And am I carrying these all the way through the Easter Mass? Oh, are they worse than what
a sensitive conscience?
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things Satan will.
Yeah.
He's the great accuser.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that easy to commit a mortal sin unless you really have a corrupt
intention.
Yeah.
Thing. Because you got to know it's a serious matter.
I was getting it for more than one thing. Yeah. Saying, oh, no. And there was other people that were suffering from this, and they were all right.
Yeah.
You know, the whole YouTube was on that. I was
like,
oh, okay.
Yeah, because, you know, you got to know it's a serious matter. You got to have the full intention. You can say, I don't care, and I'm going to do it anyway because I want to do my will.
Mm.
And then you go ahead and do it. You know, there's a lot of intentionality involved in it. And so if you don't have that, it's not mortal. And every time you receive the Eucharist, it takes away venial sin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a consolation for us to know that as weak as we are, if we're just ordinary weak, we get the strength to fight that every time we receive the Eucharist. That's why the saints say, go to Mass as often as you can. Receive the Lord as often as you can, you know? Because that's that grace that He gives us. He's reaching out and touching you every time you do that. Yeah.
And sometimes YouTube does get you all wrapped up in things. Depends on who's.
How do you get YouTube? I got my little jitterbug phone and I see all this stuff on top. And sometimes I get stuff that says YouTube.
It was a
priest. You don't have to go in, do you, to get it? Or
you know, I don't know all that.
Is it there?
Yeah. Well, I don't know what
YouTube. What's the icon for YouTube?
It's red.
It's red. It's a.
It says. Why are you
two? I don't know.
And there's one thing after another. Did you read the one on Fatima and the eclipse today?
No, I didn't.
I've seen all of that.
That
stuff.
Is a good homily. I mean, it just makes you think.
Yeah.
Go get it.
It's on YouTube?
Yeah,
but you don't know who.
Okay. I don't remember who it is. I just put in Fatima eclipse and it comes up. If you have keywords, they come up, right?
Yeah, right.
There's a lot going on that.
At first, it might not seem so good, but he goes, it's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I heard in the news that a lot of people aren't going to see it because of the cloud cover.
I know.
You're going to spend millions of dollars coming up to New York and they won't see anything.
Yeah. I talked Richard into not going. Well, I told him Buffalo, he said, how's the weather there? And I go, you know. It's cloudy a lot.
It's always cloudy.
Taking a chance. So he went to Ohio, and I'm like, please let him see it, because I said that. But no, you can think of sin, and I don't know, I got caught up on whether it's a mortal one or not. I'll tell you later what it was, but anyways.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
I got one of those welder's glasses that you can put over, look through it.
Oh, are they just as good?
It's always worked for me, you know? And so what I'm going to try to do is hold it in front of my camera, camera lens, and then take pictures of it.
And my daughter was just texting me. I gave her glasses to do on her, like, from work, walk outside. Yeah. And she says they're already 3 years old, and they say not to use them.
I know. Really? They said some of them are fake, but I said.
No, this was, we had it from the last one.
Yeah.
It even says the date.
2017.
Like, come on, it can't be
bad. How can it wear out?
I go, it was in the drawer.
Yeah. That's weird.
She said, I can't see it then. I'm like, come on, you're okay.
Okay, let's continue. We now move on to Psalm 38.
Well, that's what that means are good.
Yeah. A
couple of Psalms later. Okay, this is another kind of Mass, because the title is In Infirmity, an oppressed person pleads with God for forgiveness.
38.
That's Psalm 38. And this is a Psalm of David for the memorial offering. And so this is an infirmity. So somebody is infirm. They've got some kind of sickness or health hazard or something. Mm. They injured or something like this.
Well, how did David die?
David died of old age. He died on his bed of old age.
And was he back in God's graces at the end?
That's the impression, yeah. But it's interesting, on his deathbed, he's telling his sons what to do to protect Israel. You got to fight this guy, you got to get rid of that guy, you know. Stuff. It's interesting little dialogue. Not the kind of thing you expect of somebody to say on their deathbed. You know?
I'm about to die, but here's my war plan.
Yeah. but that was why he wasn't allowed to build the temple.
That's what makes you wonder about Israel.
Yeah.
Look what God did in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
He punished people who didn't kill the group of whoever, I can't remember who they were.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so confusing.
It is.
And then there's a whole thing about the red heifer that's really coming up
at the end of the month.
That's really coming up, yeah.
I don't know.
That's
in 40 days from today.
So it says, an infirmity, an oppressed person pleads with God for forgiveness. So begins, O Lord, rebuke me not in your anger, nor chasten me in thy wrath. For thy arrows have sunk into me, and thy hand has come down on me. This is the same opening that we saw in Psalm 6. Mm-hmm. Same words, same opening we saw in Psalm 6.
Yeah, I always wonder why they repeat so many.
The psalmist is going to say the same thing over again if it feels the same thing. How often do we say the Our Father? You know, we say it every day.
Like a song, like a verse. You're saying the verse over. You know?
Yeah,
and even
sure.
when you're giving stories, you repeat a story. The older you get, right, you give the same story.
Yeah. I probably tell you guys the same story 70 times. You know, with different things. when we had our house on Chincoteague Island, we took this ornithologist. I guess a bird guy, right? Ornithologist. He had this tour on Assateague. He was showing different birds, you know. So we were standing there, and all of a sudden I saw this family of bald eagles come flying across. And they landed over. They had two adults with a white head and a juvenile with this still brown head. And so he was talking about some little bird running around in the sand. And I said, look, over there are some bald eagles. And he got really mad because I interrupted his little lecture, you know. And so he said, okay. So he had this big telescope, you know. And he said, oh, yeah, those actually are bald eagles, you know. And so he went off on this little tangent. But ever since then, every time I tell some story twice, my wife says, eagle. She's a reference to that. Because we kept telling the same story over and over again. We saw the bald eagles.
You know what my husband used to do?
Second story.
You
said it twice.
I mean, that's funny.
So here the psalmist cries out four times to the Lord in verses 1, 9, 15, and 22. The first time, he asks the God not to be punished and tells the Lord about all the sufferings he's going through. The second, he appeals to the Lord to notice his pain. So he's saying, I'm suffering so much, please don't do anything to me, you know, which is made worse by the indifference of his friends and by harassment from his enemies. In the third plea, in verses 15 through 20, he tells God how much he trusts him, and he confesses his sin in verse 16 through 20. The fourth and last plea is an urgent cry for help. The psalm opens and closes with entreaties. But for the most part, it is an assertion of trust in the Lord. So that's what we should see as we go through this particular psalm. So this psalm, which the church uses as the third of the penitential psalms, invites the Christian to keep on confessing his sin to God, not because he fears that God might punish him by way of illness or some other misfortune, but because he feels remorse and a loss of inner peace on account of sin. And above all, because he can see the effects of sin in the sufferings of our Lord, who, though blameless, bore man's sin on his shoulders. So every time we think of what we do wrong, we think of the suffering Christ went through to compensate and atone for everything we do wrong. So he begins with that same opening as in Psalm 6, then he goes on with verse 3. There is no soundness in my flesh because of thy indignation. There is no health in my bones because of my sin. For my iniquities have gone over my head. They weigh like a burden too heavy for me. Verses 2 through 8. There's a note here that the author voices his conviction that the Lord is close to him. As his illness proves, he describes in detail the sufferings he is undergoing, just as Job did. So he talks about all the things he's going through. So verse 5, he says, my wounds grow foul and fester because of my foolishness. I am utterly bowed down and prostrate. All the day I go about mourning, for my loins are filled with burning, and there is no soundness in my flesh. Which is the same as in verse 3. I am utterly spent and crushed. I groan because of the tumult of my heart. So he's really in misery here. He's got all kinds of things. He's got wounds that fester and probably smell bad and everything. And my loins are filled with burning. I'm not sure what that is. But there are a lot of things we can think of there. And I am utterly spent and crushed. I groan because of the tumult of my heart. So his heart, even his heart is having problems. Not physically, but, you know, he's just in misery.
I don't know if he needs to list that all to God. God knows. Why can't he just say, well, you know.
But he doesn't know that.
Oh.
He doesn't. I don't think people back at that time really understood how close God is to all of us. Because they didn't even have an understanding of the afterlife. You remember we talked about that.
Right. Yeah.
And so with that lack of total understanding, you know, they're trying to deal with this in all kinds of ways. It wasn't until Jesus came for the fullness of revelation that we understood so much more than we did before. And that was a good thing. That was really essential for, because it gave us the hope to look forward to something after life.
And didn't they look at God as a punishing God?
A lot of them did, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they had a lot of trouble. I mean, it wasn't an easy life when you think about what they were living, the way they were living in Israel back then, you know. It was not an easy life. They had no indoor plumbing. Just think of going, no indoor plumbing, no toilet paper, you know, no faucets or anything. You got to go to the well to get your water.
Yeah. No antibiotics.
Yeah. And all kind of stuff. No medicines to speak of. You know, if you got sick, they poured oil on you and poured wine in your wounds and stuff like this, because the alcohol in the wine would kill the germs. And yes, so they had a lot of problems.
Yeah. And see, now we have all that.
We still have problems.
Yeah, but people don't think they need God.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
That's the problem.
That's true.
Yeah. I think we have more problems in our souls now than we do, you know, medical and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, people were so dependent upon God back then.
Yeah.
Because they were agrarian society, so they depended on God for the weather, for their crops, and everything else, you know. And if he was, like one of what was the big suffering when Joseph was in Egypt, you know, the famine.
The plague.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Isaiah talks about the great drought that came, you know, for 3 years and stuff like this. So people were dependent on God for all those kind of things, because without rain and stuff, they had nothing to eat, because they had no wheat, you know.
Well, Mother Teresa used to say, the happiest people on earth were the Indians, you know, in India. They had nothing. They were joyous, the most joyous she saw in the world. And she said, this country, our country, needs love with the people.
That's
the greatest problem in America.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because we're so focused on power and money, we forget about love.
I'll never forget when I was in India. We were at a different site, but the woman that was picking the grass, the weeds out of the grass, and was so incredibly thankful that she could do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not like she was told to or she had to or.
Yeah.
And there was no, I don't believe there was any real money that she got.
Yeah.
It just, a unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, she was just so thankful. Something we would look at and just walk by, you know? And yeah. they're just...
Well, we got the same thing here, you know? Yeah. How often do you see homeless people walking around with a grocery cart, just picking up everything they can find on the street and throw in there because it might have some value for them?
Yeah.
You know?
It just, it's
bottles
amazing.
Turn in for a rebate on the bottles, you know? Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. It's a hard way to live.
It is.
It's a really hard way to live.
Yeah.
So it goes on to verse 9, verses 9, 10 through 14, the psalmist knows that God is aware of his sufferings. He also knows that he takes no pleasure in it, unlike the psalmist's friends. So God isn't happy when you suffer, although your friends might be, if they're not very good friends, you know. Moreover, his enemies defame him. He cannot make any reply to them, for his very illness condemns him in their eyes. Anyway, he does not want to. He leaves that to God, in whom he continues to trust. So that idea of trust comes back in here on 9 through 14. And 9 says, Lord, all my longing is known to thee. My sighing is not hidden from thee. And that line 9 is kind of reminiscent of what you see all through Psalm 139 as well. Where God knows you, he knows everything about you, he's so close to you and all. That concept is there right here in verse 9. Verse 10, my heart throbs, my strength fails me, in the light of my eyes it also has gone from me. My friends and companions stand aloof from my plague, and my kinsmen stand far off. So not even his relatives are willing to help him.
But well, if he has a plague...
Yeah.
He might have leprosy.
Mm-hmm. But then he says, those who seek my life lay their snares. Those who seek my hurt speak of ruin and meditate treachery all the day long. But I am like a deaf man. I do not hear. Like a dumb man who does not open his mouth. Yea, I am like a man who does not hear and in whose mouth are no rebukes. So you look at David, you know, he was a warrior king, so there were a lot of people trying to take his life. Mm-hmm. Different enemies that he fought, but also his own son, Absalom. Mm-hmm. You know, so he got it from within his own family and then from these external enemies. They were all trying to take his life and seek to hurt him.
Did somebody kill Absalom then? Absalom. It was something in the Bible that he was saying, Absalom, Absalom, my son.
Yeah, that was after he was
dead.
Killed.
Yeah.
He was killed. Absalom was riding his donkey.
Okay.
And he got his hair caught in a tree.
Okay.
And he was hanging in the tree.
Okay.
And one of David's soldiers saw that and came in and threw a second with a spear and killed him.
Okay.
And then he went and told David, thinking he did a good thing. And David was all miserable because that was his son. He still loved his son, even though his son was trying to kill him. His son wanted his throne. So he was ambitious.
Okay.
And his ambitious got him nowhere. And then verse 15 says, the psalmist puts his hopes in the Lord. God will be the judge, and only he knows who are righteous. And then in 21 and 22, he said he begs God to come to him and cure him. Over the course of the psalm, in the final verses, he addresses God as Lord, my God, and as my salvation. So he gives God these different titles, you know, my God, my salvation. He has been growing more and more aware of God's nearness, which he already acknowledged indirectly at the start. Therefore, the psalm is a good example of the effectiveness of persevering prayer. God always listens to it. Your desire is your prayer. If the desire is constant, so too is the prayer. If your desire is part of your interior life, it will also be present in your cry to God. Perhaps your cry will never reach the ears of men, but it is always heard by God. And that's from St. Augustine. And it says, as in other psalms, we see here that the man of the Old Testament lives his sickness in the presence of God. It is before God that he laments his illness, and it is of God, master of life and death, that he implores healing. Illness becomes a way to conversation. God's forgiveness initiates the healing.
The conversion.
Yeah. So it begins with verse 9. We did that already, didn't we? No. Did we do 9 yet?
We're 15.
15.
Yeah.
Okay. 15. Okay. But for thee, O Lord, do I wait. It is thou, O Lord, my God, who will answer. For I pray, only let them not rejoice over me who boast against me when my foot slips. So he's putting his all of his hope in God there. For I am ready to fall, and my pain is ever with me. I confess my iniquity. I am sorry for my sin. We're going to come back to verse 18 in a second. Those who are my foes without cause are mighty, and many are those who hate me wrongly. Those who render me evil for good are my adversaries because I follow after good. Do not forsake me, O Lord. O my God, be not far from me. Make haste to help me, O Lord, my salvation. You see that, that verse 18 there. I confess my iniquity. I am sorry for my sin. The root of his call is his acknowledging of his iniquity. And the result is that he becomes sorry for his sin. So he relies on God. His hope is in God. But we're going to jump for something for just a second here. The next psalm is Psalm 51. And before we begin that psalm, I want to jump in that psalm to verse 2, where it says, "What?" It says basically the same thing. He says, I confess my iniquity, I'm sorry for my sin. And verse 2 of Psalm 51 says, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. Basically saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that sound familiar to you?
Mm-hmm.
That verse?
From the Mass.
From the Mass. Mm-hmm. When does the priest say that?
Washing of
the hands. Right before he's going to consecrate the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, go back to the Old Testament. The priest is about to do the consecration.
Oops.
Which is offered for the forgiveness of sin. Okay, that was what Jesus said at the Last Supper. This is my chalice of my blood, which is offered for you, forgiveness of sin. So he's about to go now. When the high priest at Yom Kippur would make an offering to God, an offering for the sin of Israel, he would fast for 7 days. He would not touch his wife for 7 days. He would cleanse himself every way he possibly could, because if he went in unclean, God would strike him dead. So when he would go in to make that sacrifice for the sins of Israel, they would tie a rope around his ankle. And he would have these phylacteries and all on his garments. So when he's doing all the incense and everything else, he would make a lot of noise. If the noise stopped for a while, that meant God struck him dead. So the people couldn't go in there. So they had to pull him out with the rope. And we don't have any instances of that happening, but that was what it was for. Okay? And so now, so the priest has to really purify himself before he offers sacrifice for the sins of Israel. Now, the priest at the Mass is offering the sacrifice of Christ for the sins of everybody, for all of us. I've never thought that was an appropriate thing to say right before you're going to do the consecration, because this is taken from Psalm 51, the Miserere, that David offered as a consequence of being caught for his sin.
Yeah.
You know? So he says, take away my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. Should you have iniquity? And be very simple right before you're going to consecrate the Eucharist? I don't think so. Now let's contrast that with the prayer that they said in the Latin Mass, the traditional Mass, when the priest is washing his hands, he says, I will wash my hands among the innocent and go round thy altar, Lord. And he would go round the altar with the incense, that I may listen to the sound of praise and may tell all thy wonderful works. Lord, I have loved the beauty of thy house and the place where thy glory dwells. Do not let my soul be lost with sinners. save my life from the men of blood, whose hands are sinful, whose right hands are full of bribes, which is a direct reference to Judas. He was bribed to give up God. But I have walked in innocence. Deliver me in thy mercy. My foot has stood in the right path. I will bless thee in the churches, O Lord. Then he says the Gloria. That's the prayer he says right before that.
I wonder why they changed it.
That's a way big difference.
It's a huge difference in the whole tone of the prayer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful prayer. Mm-hmm. Don't get me started on Bugnini and what he did to the mass. Okay? We'll be here the whole rest of the day. Because, I mean, but that always bothered me that it made that change. It also bothered me that they changed the word of consecration of the chalice. Because in the old mass, it said, this is the chalice of my blood of the new and everlasting covenant, which is shed for you and for many.
This is
the chalice of my blood of the new and everlasting covenant, the mystery of faith, which is shed for you and for many for the forgiveness of sins. Yes. They took out the mystery of faith.
Isn't
St. John Paul II taught that the Eucharist is the mystery of our faith.
Right.
It's the summit of our faith.
No,
that was at Vatican II. Well, Vatican II didn't do it. Bogdini did it. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Vatican II fathers, all they said was develop the Mass organically. Yeah. You know, put things into vernacular that makes sense, but retain the Latin.
Yeah.
And Bogdini scrapped the whole thing. Everything he did in that Novus Ordo was a complete contradiction of what the Vatican II fathers said to do in Sacrosanctum Concilium.
And there was nobody to contradict him?
A lot of people did. Cardinal Taviani was head of the prefect of, but he was blind and very old. So he wrote a document to Paul VI called the Ottaviani intervention. Mm-hmm. And he talked about all the problems with it. Several other cardinals also did the same thing. But finally, Bugnini convinced Paul VI to sign off on it, which he did reluctantly, because he thought it was the work of the Holy Spirit at work. The minute he initiated it, right away we saw all kind of liturgical abuses coming in. And so 7 years after that Mass was promulgated, Paul VI was livid, because he saw the result of all these liturgical abuses going on. A lot more than we see today, okay? Because John Paul took some of that. But he was very upset. And so he wrote a letter to the whole clergy. And he said, knock off all these abuses. It's terrible what you're doing. But nobody paid attention to him. And so we have, the mass in California where they're all dressed up in a Halloween mass for Halloween costumes.
In Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
wanted change. They wouldn't listen.
They wouldn't listen to anything,
So the big thing about the mass in Wisconsin not that long ago where Native American people did a dance.
Same thing, same kind of thing. And there was a mass at a seminary up in Pennsylvania somewhere where they dressed up in Muppets costumes. It's called the Muppet Mass.
Oh, it was all over.
I mean, it was terrible, They're not doing it anymore, But those are the kind of things that started happening right away after this Mass was initiated. And priests had no problem changing the order of the Mass and everything else. I went to a Mass down in Virginia Beach, and after the consecration, the priest waited till after everybody received the Eucharist before he received it and drank the chalice. And he didn't distribute anything. He had lay people distribute the Eucharist.
They do that a lot still.
Even though he was the principal, he stayed up on the altar. He didn't distribute it. So there were a lot of abuses of various levels and kinds that took place. And Paul VI got really livid, but nobody paid attention to his letter. It took other popes to try to turn that around. You'll be John Paul and Benedict and stuff like that. But I don't know.
About I didn't realize that you really shouldn't be having meat on Fridays. That that was something that came out of that, that you...
Well, we used to have to abstain from meat on Friday before
Vatican
II.
But then they said you could do another kind of...
They said you didn't have to do a meat, you could take something else.
But because this diocese would like us to go back to that.
Mm. Yeah. And so they said, you know, make a sacrifice on Friday.
Something else.
Doesn't necessarily have to be mass.
Because people used to have fancy fish.
Yeah.
On Friday.
Yeah, lobsters and fish and stuff like that.
Right.
You know,
that's true.
Yeah. In fact, I knew this family where the grandmother was very anti-Catholic. And so she would not let her family ever eat fish on Friday because she didn't want anybody to think they were Catholic. I mean, people get crazy like that, you know? People get really crazy.
But we were Good Friday in Dachau, Germany.
Okay.
Good Friday. Every restaurant had a huge spread of the most gorgeous fish you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And they did that all over Europe.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
Yeah.
And then we can take a look at that, and we can contrast that to Psalm 26, page 106. Let me get back to there for a second here. Sorry for the diversion, but it's kind of interesting.
It is.
And so Psalm 26 is where you find that prayer that I just read to you. It says, I wash my hands in innocence and go about thy altar, O God, singing aloud a song of thanksgiving and telling all thy wondrous deeds. O Lord, I love the habitation of thy house and the place where thy glory dwells. And all. So that's where that prayer came from. Came from Psalm 26.
You know, this book is not good because I'm noticing what you read is not exactly what I have in here and I'm looking.
What's a different translation?
Yeah, this is the St. Joseph New Catholic Version, but it's quite different.
Yeah.
That was right after Vatican II. And
I don't like this book now.
They wanted to make it more relevant.
Yeah.
No, I got the old Bible home.
Yeah. Right.
The old one, you know, from the 40s.
Right.
I'll use that one.
Yeah, but Psalm 26 is where that prayer that the priest would say when he would go in to the Holy of Holies to offer a sacrifice for the sins
of
Israel.
It also sounds
like
the Latin one, too.
Sorry?
It sounds like the Latin one, too.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Around the altar.
Yeah, around the altar, right.
And Thanksgiving.
And that's exactly what... It's amazing how much of the liturgy comes from the Jewish liturgies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, God never said change anything. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, that makes sense. How would you just make it up? You know, you'd have to be inspired.
Right.
Where would you get it from?
Yeah, so every other church just makes their liturgy up, if they even have a liturgy.
Yeah.
Mostly they just talk.
Yeah.
You know, but but when you look at the Latin Mass in particular, but even our current Mass, so much of that is reminiscent of what the Jewish liturgies were like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Which it was a completion of.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it should be.
It's just a continuation, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, after the resurrection, the apostles were going into the temple to pray and preach, you know? There was no expectation there would ever be a difference.
Right. Yeah.
It was just a continuation of Judaism. That's why Roy Shulman says when he converted to Catholic Church from the Jewish faith, he felt like he was fulfilled. He felt like a fulfilled Jew. He said, I didn't feel like I converted. Yeah. I just felt fulfilled because we were always waiting for the Messiah. Now he's here.
Mm.
You know? So with that little diversion, I think it's now 10:30. So we'll stop here rather than start a new one. And we'll pick up with Psalm 51 next time.
51, okay.
And take a look at that. So this is a psalm that David wrote after Nathan the prophet came to him and accused him of adultery and murder.
Okay.
And if you want to go back and look at that in the book of Kings, it would be interesting to read that to get the background for why he wrote this here. And it's the book in 2 Samuel. This is 2 Samuel. It says here, verses 11 and 12. Mm-hmm. And as the note here says, the entire prayer of Psalm 51 is the fulfillment of Psalm 50, which is the one right preceding it. So if you want to just get a sense of, you know, the context, you can read 50 if you want, but we don't have to do that. We just start with 51 next time. Anybody have any thoughts or anything before we leave for the day?
I think we set it up.
Yeah. I think most of you have your comments as we went along, which is the great thing. I love it doing this way. I would hate this to be a lecture and then ask for questions and answers. You know?
But I do interrupt a little too much.
No, you don't.
That's what it's for. That's the whole purpose of doing it this way. Make it a dialogue, not a lecture, you know?
It's better than just listening.
Yeah, because you're going to think of something on the spot. If I was lecturing and then you had your questions, you'd forget the question, right?
That's right.
So I like it this way a lot better, so you can discuss what you want while we're in process.
I'll tell you something funny. My granddaughter, Marissa, you know, she has... mental problems, physical problems. Everything she gets through is it's a mind-boggling what she did. But her problem is, because of her disease, she doesn't go into the four stages of sleep. She only goes into two. So she wakes up. That's why she could never even wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. That's why she missed 2 years of school. And they finally, after years, found a doctor. Well, but you can't change Marissa's mind at all. Now she's 25. So she's been going to a few doctors. One of them, he's not into sleep disorders. Well, he is, but not her specific one. But he has given her medication for the past 2 years. It's done nothing. Mm-hmm. But she won't change because she says it might. There's no reasoning to it. She said it might work. It might work. So Carol found somebody in Washington, D.C. that's an expert on POTS disease and gives medication for the sleep disorder with POTS. But Marissa says, I don't have POTS. Carol's tried everything, and she said she gets very aggravated when she mentions this is how you are. You're not sleeping, but you won't take another pill. So, no. So Marissa,
take the PATS medicine, put that in her regular medicine bottle, and throw the other one away.
But the problem is she's 25, and the doctors won't do this now. They have to talk to Marissa because she's an adult. Right. I said, I can call the doctor on the QT. You got to work something out. But anyway, Marissa's smart. She goes on the computer, and she speaks to young adults who have her sleep problem. But she's very good in English. I mean, she's extremely good. Art is beyond belief. English also. And she uses big words. So she goes on the computer and she writes like the four paragraphs. And no one responds to it. Carol said, no one's reading it. She said, you write these long medical words. And she said, it's not interesting. She said, just write, I have this sleep disorder. I'm taking these pills. They're not working. What do you do? Mm-hmm. I could never do that, she says. Everything has to. And she's a perfectionist. Yeah. She can spend an hour writing one sentence. And Carol says, can't do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
so frustrating.
That's funny.
But Carol has a good sense of humor. She goes along with it because she says, what can you do?
What can you do, right?
You know, have another glass of wine at night.
That's right.
Okay. You have to laugh.
See you guys.
I mean, this problem could be solved so easily. Just go to the doctor and get them out.
So thank you.
Yeah.
And she can.
See you.
Because if she talks about it, she goes into a... She can go 4 hours on talking about you hate me, you don't like me, you're causing me.
Oh, it's so sad.
So yeah, you work on eggshells.
I had that with both of my daughters. So I could write a book on it.